Parafactual narratives, I should define, is content that treats reality as if it's fiction, or perhaps living reality for the camera, in constant anticipation of how it can be edited and inserted into a narrative arc, hypostitially performing itself as linear reality. I think we all know that truth is always somewhat stranger than fiction, especially after watching shows like Tiger King and Real Love, that fiction is only as weird as spiced up reality. The task for the artist at hand is to invent the reality.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Framing Visual Culture. How is everyone doing in this time of quarantine? We can't physically meet our friends anymore, but social life is not dead. We try our best to continue having fun and staying creative, taking all this even more to the virtual world. Today, we have video artist Ji Chao on the show to talk about digitization and fictionalization in the context of art. We will cover the current trends in living our lives through avatars and use Ji's works to unpack the topics of digitization and fictionalization. Welcome, Ji!
Hello!
Hey! How are you feeling? Good day?
Today, not bad, I think. We had a long weekend, I guess, so that was time to rest and realign, you know, rethink about what I need to do for the week and everything.
Yeah, you're right. Hari Raya. Sometimes,
yeah,
I think even though we're staying home all the time, it still makes a difference when you have a day off versus, like, you feel like you need to wake up and work.
Yeah, I think, like, I've been losing track of time because everybody's at home all the time and you're just working all the time. But sometimes setting aside time for yourself and just saying, okay, I'm not working like these 3 days, it really, really helps.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of makes us more focused when we get back to work as well, I think.
Yeah, it makes you want to go back to work.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's like, can't remember who said that, you know, leisure has no meaning without work. So you kind of need to have both. So what got us thinking about this as well from my side was that, you know, with the quarantine, everyone is moving their social lives onto the internet and games. So for instance, with Animal Crossing, like a lot of people were playing Animal Crossing and not just using it to in the parameters of the game itself where you're just like farming, but they're actually playing with their friends, and I have friends who are doing art shows on it. And recently, Valentino as well did a collaboration with Animal Crossing to show their runway shows on this platform. And not just Animal Crossing, but as we know, Minecraft, there are also clubs on it, which is like insane. And like graduation ceremonies and funerals. Wow, I mean, have you played any of these games before personally?
Well, I wanted to get into Animal Crossing, like, I think just before the whole virus like situation got really bad. But then I think even then, I couldn't get a hold of Switch already.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
it was just getting sold out. I think people were already anticipating that, and there were so many articles, I think from the States, because they went into lockdown before us, right? Talking about how relaxing and therapeutic New Horizons is.
Yeah,
and then
New
it
Horizon.
Was just like gone in Singapore. You can't get them already.
Yeah, the fact that people who don't have Switch are just like crazily trying to get a Switch. Yeah. But of course, that is on a separate console, but a lot of these other games are on PCs, so it's easier for us to access. Like, there's Second Life, and there's also IMVU, which I know you've been using recently, and this is not the first time that you have used it, right?
Actually, I used IMVU when I was like 12 or 13 years old. I think it was definitely like the sexier Second Life. At that point of time, like Second Life, it was something like my dad was really interested in, because I think as a game, it was more like existential.
Wow.
It was the kind of like game that you went in and then you really like rebuilt a life and like connections and social groups on. But me being like just the kid, the teenager that wanted to look very hot lah, right? I think I gravitated towards IMVU because their avatars are like the hottest, the sexiest ones that you can get online.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Second Life is a bit more realistic in that sense, or it's for people who want to fulfill all their desires, but like normal desires per se, in like to build their life in a different way. That's why it's called Second Life. But IMVU, as you've mentioned, definitely caters to like a more, I would almost want to say subcultural, because a lot of the styles of the clothes that they have, like actually I used it when I was 13 or so, and that was like a good 12 years ago or more. This is insane. Yeah. And at the time they had a lot of emo goth clothes,
yes,
right? And like the hairstyles and all that as well. And even now they have that as well, but I've noticed that the main avatar when you sign on, it's like a Kim Kardashian, like if you're a girl, it's a Kim Kardashian style.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's the audience base right now.
Yeah, I'm surprised like platforms like this survive so long. Like you say, it was like what, 12, 13 years. They've probably been around for like longer than that. And I mean, it just means that even before the virus and this whole situation, like people were still using it quite regularly. And yeah, I was looking at like Second Life again recently, and they even do like book clubs.
Yes.
That, where they can like...
No, I read about that, but could you enlighten me more?
Oh, I mean, I've never been on them like personally, but it sounded so interesting because they would invite the author of the book,
okay,
to speak to the fans and the readers through Second Life. You know, it's...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting on so many levels, because like obviously the writer, if they are like a fiction or like sci-fi writer, like that fictionalization is already part and parcel of their practice. And then like bringing that one layer up to somewhat reality where they interact with real people, like for them it's probably like very good content and a good exercise as well.
Yeah, I like what you mentioned about this interacting with real people, but it's in like a very fake space, so-called fake, but we kind of see that as reality as well, right? Because the people participating are real, and the feeling is again different from just social media or chat rooms, because like right now you have an avatar that you can dress up. And I think it's also interesting to think about this idea of whether you make the avatar to look like you or to look like someone that's your, or this fantasies. So how, because we know that IMVU has a lot of these different options. You can look like a Kardashian. Some people do that in real life, but you can also like get wings, or I don't know, can you be a dragon? How do you build your character?
I think you can. You can even like upload your own images and turn them into like 3D like avatars. I think there are ways to do it, but I haven't went on that level of customization yet, because like you have to be a VIP to customize all these things. But yeah, I think like compared to social media, where there is like there's still this like requirement that it has to relate to you or like your own personality in some way or another. It's like an extension of your personality, right? Like I think avatars and these completely anonymous like spaces gives you just that much more freedom to customize, dress up, but at the same time you still have like the option of choosing how much you want to reveal about yourself, you know, like you can still like choose like facial features that relate to how you look like in real life.
Uh-huh.
I think having that like option is very important, you know, like
yeah.
I feel like sometimes on social media you don't really have the choice, because like if you post something up that's like so obviously not you, like it's recognizable. People will know. People can smell the bullshit, you know.
Like if you facetune your face or put some filter. But that's a very interesting point, that like we expect social media to be real, to be like the real us, whereas when you go into this obviously fictional world where nobody really looks like however they are, we are more lenient when it comes to that, or like we kind of all play into this fantasy of who we can be. Like even in Animal Crossing, I guess the characters look quite standard in a sense, you know, they don't look like real human beings. They're more really just like cute avatars. But of course, you can choose to, let's say, like have different skin tones to look more like you in real life, or just be like a complete crazy thing, because all your islanders are animals anyway. Yeah. So let's talk a bit about fictionalization as well. I wasn't familiar with this word originally. Then when I went to search, the dictionary definition was saying that fictionalization means when a literary work based partly or wholly on fact is written as if it were fiction. So in a sense, is it making something that's real and then kind of making it unreal?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, fictionalization is a device or like something I use like in my works personally, because I quite like to play with the breaking the boundaries between what is real and what is not, and I think that comes a lot from my obsession with like reality TV as well, because you would think like, okay, reality TV is based on reality, but I think anyone who's worked in the industry or anyone who's like obsessively studied reality TV will tell you that that's not the case. But what makes it really interesting is because it's so self-aware as a genre of about how people see it as reality, that it can really like profoundly like blur the line between the two states lah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we'll go into reality TV in the next segment.
Yeah,
I'm very excited to talk about it, because honestly, I also love reality TV. So let's start with, since we're talking about this avatars, okay, let's start with the current project that you're part of, which is Prepao by Pure Ever. Okay, can you tell us more about, okay, what's Pure Ever and what's this exhibition / project Prepao?
Hey, yeah, so Pure Ever is like something like an alliance of people that have come together. There are five of us, and we try to find commonality and like collective foresight through nuanced but intense forms of art making. And we hope that it can occupy a more generous spirit of collaboration, creativity, networking, and solidarity making. So we started doing Pure Ever last year in October. So we had a show in a local gallery, and we invited like 10 other artist friends to be part of the show. And I think at that point of time, we weren't sure if it was going to be like a long-term like collaborative or not at the time. We just wanted to do a show together. But after working with everyone, I think it became quite intuitive that we continued like working together, because it was so fun. And yeah, so we really want to like form alliances with other creatives, let's say, that were previously not offered the platforms to express or like were marginalized in any way. And I think this, for us, it goes beyond like reductive identitarian like politics. So we want to make space for people who don't feel like they necessarily belong in like the artistic, intellectual or conceptual like zeitgeist. So we want to like invite people, individuals and communities that are like working hard to carve out their own tracks lah.
Is this based in Singapore? Like all the artists are from Singapore?
Yeah, we are all from Singapore, and yeah, we are just quite, I think, socially generated lah. Like we like to choose people to work with us whom we have personal connections with, so like friends. And yeah, we really value that connection, like perhaps even more than like the content or the form of their practices.
Okay, I see. So in that sense, you wouldn't say that there's a overarching like aesthetic or like what's the kind of, like what kind of people do you think would be drawn to this in terms of both artists and like the people who enjoy the art?
Yeah, so in our team, there's like me, Rifki, Hillary, Raigo, and Elsa. And we all met like kind of through partying, like in Singapore, like in the last year or so. So I think our aesthetics are quite internet based, I would say. And also, if there is even something like a party like aesthetic,
right, like the whole rave posters, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would say like rave posters, quite Instagram-y, very like 2D but make it 3D, and a lot of like sparkles, kira kira kira, very like wet and glossy. But that's also because like that was the aesthetic that we were consuming a lot at that time. So I guess maybe the word relevant comes to mind, because if like at that point of time we were consuming some other aesthetic, like it might have been that as well. And I can foresee our aesthetics like mutating along the way.
Yeah, and even right now, would you say that as compared to last year in October, like as you embark on new projects, do things change? Like if you're saying if it's relevant, so do you guys, are you guys noticing different trends that you're picking up or that you want to explore?
Surprisingly, I would say like the growth that I've witnessed within ourselves is that it has become more personalized and in fact becoming less relevant, if that makes sense. Because at the in the beginning, it was a bit more like, I guess, in a way, a bit more like derivative, like it was based off that stuff that we've seen. But now that we've kind of been working together for a while, I think we are building our own personal like vocabulary, like aesthetic vocabulary as to like what kind of looks we want for each party, you know, like. And it's also like because we live in Singapore, you know, how do we make that aesthetic like based in local culture or like local words, local vernacular? I think that's the kind of shift in aesthetics that I've been seeing la.
Yeah. And so Pre-Pow is the latest exhibition since the October one.
There was a party in between. Yeah. Okay. We did like a performance art slash party in February called Nu. It was just a lot of NU.
It's a bit like party. A kaomoji, or does it?
Sorry?
Is it a bit like a kaomoji?
Oh yes, we used a lot of kaomojis. I think yes, like letters and symbols that form something more image like. Yeah. So yeah, after the new party, this is our, I guess, the like big project that we've done in collaboration with Islands Peninsula, which is like a art space in Singapore that is actually more of like a VM space.
Okay.
It's not really a shop house that you can enter. It's a very, very narrow like shop space that we have set up stuff inside, and then we kept the doors closed so that it's almost just like a viewing gallery, you know, you can't go in, you just look at the works from outside. Yeah,
and you have right now, you guys did one of the artist talks through IMVU, and some of the upcoming parties that's going to be done through IMVU as well, right? So how did that thought appear, and what do you feel like after having tried it once?
The idea of using IMVU definitely came from like a lot of like Instagram-based browsing, as usual. So I think some of us like picked up on some other like organization or like arts pages that were using IMVU for various different things, either for like making marketing videos or like also like doing like virtual raves. And we saw that, and then we were like, oh my god, it looks so good. And the sense of style that was imbued in IMVU just like spoke to us immediately. And also like I think we were quite triggered by the word like webinars, you know, like everyone's doing conferences or like talks through Zoom. And
yeah, the feel is very different, right? When you say, oh, we're going to have a Zoom party versus like, yeah, let's rave on IMVU.
Yeah, like, I feel like it's this, like, Zoom and all that kind of, like, platforms, it still tries to retain a sense of, like, reality or, like, looking like a person, you know? Like, so instead of hanging out all in a space, like to do the talk, we all hang out in front of our computers, you know, we still see each other the same way, like I will look at your face, you know, like still want to like make eye contact with the camera to make sure that, you know, people are absorbed when they're listening to me. So we just want to do something that is like
not so serious.
Yeah, and also if you want to like embrace this like digital revolution and doing like talks or making content, we just wanted to like go all out. No like imitation of reality or trying to redo that, but just like the platform and the performance on the platform itself becomes like the main thing.
Yeah, I like that. Definitely that performativity, as well as I guess in IMVU, even all the different rooms, which are all these different virtual spaces that people can build, are also very, very stylized. I mean, I'm sure you can find some kind of like IKEA-ish homes, but there are way like crazier things, which I, you know, I'm sure people would prefer to go for. So you guys built this spa room, right? How was that experience of building it?
I think like we've always wanted to like think of Pure Ever as some sort of like a meditation center, like for holistic healing, you know, spiritual, psychological, social. And our lives, at least from the very beginning, was very like floaty, you know, very like like cerulean blue, sparkling, very like pure water, that kind of thing. So the spa just kind of came quite easily to us. We wanted a, like a so-called like hangout space, because the content of the artist talk was going to be still quite like heavy lah, you know. And so we saw like the spa room, the way what we called it was kind of like the smoking corner to the club.
I see.
Yeah, so the talk was happening on Facebook Live, which is like the serious place, and you know, not everybody wants to interact or ask questions seriously on Facebook Live. So we wanted to have this other spot that people could go to just to like chat with the artist like more casually, and even just not talk about the art and just, you know, hang out lah, like as friends.
Yeah, it goes back to what you said about making the connections and the networking, which is important to this whole group, right? Cool. Nice. And so there's one more party coming up. Is that going to be the last one or for now?
I think it will be the last one for now, definitely. Yeah, and we are really excited about this party because we are getting like two new rooms, and you know, we're gonna like buy like dance moves for the space, which may or may not look actually like a raving space, you know. What if it's in the spa and all that, right?
I love that. I love that there's this thing to look forward to. I think it really is very different from just Zoom and, like, as you said, webinars. And the fact that having a physical space, as much as it's a fake physical space, like seeing your avatar in a space, it's almost like you being in a physical space. Like, the feeling is very different. And that's quite liberating in that sense.
I love how you can, like, pan, zoom in, zoom out so easily on IMVU. It's almost a bit like ADHD to me, because sometimes I accidentally touch my mouse and then it suddenly zooms into my face, and then I'm like, oh, this is like a piece of art in front of me, I need to screenshot this, because
I love the screenshot feature of that as well. Like, I feel like I could just go there and take pictures. It's really nice.
And then sometimes it not really glitches, but it's just like the model wasn't made perfectly, and then you like go inside your arm.
It's really weird, but like fun in that way also.
Great place for taking photos, like you said.
Agreed.
Or even like abstract, almost abstract landscapes.
Yeah, it's like almost a good way to go on little virtual trips around the world, or like around people's mind, if you want. Cool. Okay, so looking forward to the party, definitely. Let's talk about reality TV. And I know you have like quite a few works that is inspired by, and also because you do a lot of video work as well, so I think that element of like reality and fiction definitely plays into this. So okay, reality TV, we have to talk about this one that we love called Real Love.
Yay! I'm so happy I made you think watch this.
I know, right? Yeah, I'm really glad you made me watch it. I seen it before, but I kind of just forgot about it. And then when we were discussing doing this podcast, G was like, yes, this thing. So Real Love. Just to give a bit of context, Real Love is a Japanese reality TV show. It's like a dating show where I think 18 men and women, or maybe less, yeah, about 18 men and women go to an island in, go to Okinawa and spend 3 day 2 nights. But the twist is that they all have some hidden past, like some secrets that stop them from pursuing a regular relationship. And so throughout the 3 day 2 nights, everyone has to reveal their dark secrets one by one, and then we see them interacting, and then like the difference before and after they reveal their secrets is quite a ride.
Real love, wow, it's really like a roller coaster of a ride. Like, I have my own backstory about real love as well. Like, so I started watching it because I thought it was good, like, research for a life creative show, which was the artist reality TV that I was making. But the thing is that I couldn't get past, like, the first 2 episodes or 3 episodes. And so I stopped because, you know, it sets you up for such a disappointing, or like, you know, that it's sensationalized like right from the beginning because of how much they talked about
The
the
secrets.
dark secret. You know, like there's like a gong and then someone has to read out their dark secret in front of everyone. So like in the beginning my heart couldn't take it, so I couldn't finish it.
Oh no.
But then after I met like my collaborator for LCS, Chong Lee, and then he was the one other person I knew in the whole world that watched Real Love. And then he convinced me to continue watching it. He told me that like because it sets you up in the beginning to be such a potentially horrible show, that like any small acts of kindness or like any like small sparks of like seemingly real love that occurs throughout the show becomes so salient. It really like warms your heart. It really makes you like tingle more than like other reality TV shows. And that's the kind of like mindset I went into finishing the rest of the show, and it was real. It was like I really got very absorbed, and it even made me cry like at some moments.
Okay, so what's your verdict? Do you think it's real?
It's real given the fact that they are basically isolated from the rest of the world for like those 5 days. And I think, yes, these people are probably lonely like outside of the TV show, but they are probably even more lonely, like contradictingly, like being in the show because they are there alone by themselves without phones or access to their families or their friends, and therefore like whatever like connection they seem to make with other contestants at that point of time must definitely feel very real to them. Yeah, and you can't really experience that if you don't have like a whole TV production crew like setting up that space and context for you to live your life that way for like the week. But whether or not those relationships like continue into like past the show, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess that we can never know for sure. Did you see the twist at the end? That really got me. Like, after they returned back, they returned from Okinawa. There was like a few days after. That part was like, wow.
I
Compared,
love those.
yeah. That, and then it's like at the end of the show, they asked like, okay, so what is real love? And like that was really interesting because the idea of the show is that because these people start their relationship by revealing their secrets, so they can help to help each other get over this dark past and therefore possibly have like a more open relationship. And I guess I do think that it's unscripted, and like the honestly some of the dark secrets are not, you know, like crazy that kind, but of course it's up to the person like how much they're affected by it. But yeah, it was, I think when I started watching it, I was really excited in the beginning to see a lot of drama. But as you have said, there were actually a lot of moments of like very heartwarming, or like, you know, seeing all these people who have been hurt, like helping each other. That was really nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a device of reality TV. They like they describe each individual character as so vulnerable, so problematic in the beginning, and then like you, and then you slowly peel away the layers of the onion and realize, oh, actually they are like real human beings with real emotions as well. Like even though I'm like, I don't know, like a sex addict, or even though like I cannot, I've cheated on multiple women, or like I'm in debt. Like, you know, like these things don't define them as people, right? That's the main crux of the show.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. But of course, you also see that there are some people that at first, obviously you like them, and then as they went on, you're like, I'm not really sure about this person anymore. And then it's like all of us as audience outsiders, we're just like casting our judgments. And it really, it really depends on how the editors and the directors decide to edit the show at the end.
It's about how like the viewers' like perception or like judgment of each person changes throughout the course of you watching it. And I also love the, like we were talking about the twist at the end, right? Like how like at the end, like two people who weren't like shoved together during the show ended up spending more time together outside of the show because of various like real life circumstances. Like I love that part of like reality TV, you know, where they like at the end of the show, then they have like, it's almost like an epilogue, you know, like, okay, now this is 3 months after the filming and this is what is happening to all these like characters.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm surprised they want to take part in that actually. So how did that help you direct or edit the show when you were doing the live creative show?
I think like direction wise, because like both me and Chong, like we have never done reality TV show before, and we wanted to make live creative show like something that appropriates or borrows the tropes of reality TV, but also we want to try to do it in an as ethical way as possible, because everyone knows how like exploitative like mass produced reality TV shows can be, you know, like how producers nudge you to say certain things, to sensationalize certain like events. So we tried to be a bit more like laissez-faire about the way we directed things for our show. So we just let our characters, our cast members do whatever they want, and we are just there for documentation. And that made like, I guess, the activities and the happenings and the relationships like to, form during the show more organic and natural. But I'm at the stage where I'm editing the footage, and I think it is inevitable that the editor has to insert some flares or like give focus to certain statements made than others to form like the narrative that we talked about changing how the viewer sees a person in the beginning throughout the show. You know, like that personal growth is a very, very important like arc in any filmmaking or like reality TV like making.
So when you guys started this, was there an agenda per se? Like what do you guys think you would get out of this, or what did you want the participants to get out of this?
So I think like LCS, right, it actually started off as like a in-depth investigation / manic attempt to document all forms of creative labor, because my personal practice has been about that for quite a while. And like creative labor as like the most elusive form of labor historically, like, you know, like how big institutions can say, okay, I'm not going to pay you for this work, but I offer you exposure, you know, like it's something that you can rarely use money to account for, and you don't feel good trying to put a price on your practice because it's so linked to you personally. And so like the reality TV like format like kind of presented itself as an option for me because of my like obsession with things like Terrace House, Big Brother, Real Love and all that. And also like because like reality TV like required such like narrative and visual control, like reality TVs utilize probably more, way more camera angles and way more microphones than conventional films, because you don't know what to expect, right? You don't know like which angle, when this person is like scolding someone, looks the best, or like, you know, you don't know who is gonna say something damn epic like at which point. So your cameras has to be on all the time. And so it kind of just like fit quite nicely with this like this desire to like manically document every act of creative labor. So like we filmed the creatives for like 1.5 weeks and in like 6 different angles, and we also like invited mystery guests. We had confessions. So basically playing with the genre of like reality TV, but also fermenting it like in our own way. Yeah.
Nice. At what point is it right now? Are you almost done? Do you feel like it has changed, or what you expected the result to be?
It's definitely changing as we edit. So I think what we realized after we filmed was that like even though like reality TV is usually so like fast-paced and so exciting, right? The actual filming process is not like that. It's actually, there's a lot of like banal and mundane like day-to-day activities that occur as well that we still have to be part of. Like you can't expect like the shooting of the reality TV show to be as exciting as what you see in the end. And I think like the editing or the editor really plays a much bigger role than we expected, like in the formatting or like making exciting the TV show. I'm still learning on the editing like process, but it definitely made me realize that it's so much harder to do a reality TV show than what I expected.
So in the past, you also make video art, but do you come up with a storyboard first and then go and shoot? So in that sense, it'll be really different.
I think in the past, I used to have at least a bit of a narrative structure. I think because I used to use a lot of like found footage. And so like our screen record things. So yes, I do find a lot of unexpected like footage from different places, but I usually have a mold of like, you know, like at this segment I want to find a video of like something related to someone throwing up on a roller coaster, you know, then I will find a footage that fits that image in mind. So there's definitely that sense of like directing in my previous works. But like for this time, it's a lot more like letting it go, like going with the flow, going with the moods of the cast members, going with the availability of the crew members, you know, like there's a lot that's not within my control.
Do you feel like that made you rethink your creative labor, or shed light on the way that you're making work?
Yes, because like at first, like it was all about the cast, right? It was about their acts of creative labor. Like, you know, it was almost a bit like too focused on that like when you're actually like doing the shooting and everything, then you suddenly realize, okay, that's the labor, the creative labor, or even non-creative labor of everyone else around you, the person who is like providing the space, the supernormal, like the gallery, like how we kept asking for like more furniture, you know, we needed like media, like technical help from them and all that. And that's not reflected in our shooting, you know, that's something that we completely like forgot about despite our claims to try to document all sorts of creative labor. So in fact, after shooting, you're like, okay, so you're making reality TV show about creative labor, but that's only like limited to the 3 creatives that you're focusing on. You know, you basically forgot about everyone else.
Wow, yeah, this kind of meta. Like, you can't possibly put everything in there. It's like you're trying to be behind the scenes, but there's even more behind the scenes.
Exactly. If you try to have someone document that behind the scenes, then you need someone else to document that person doing that, you know, B-roll, then C-roll, D-roll. Never-ending life cycle. So there's definitely going to be someone who's, like, sort of neglected in the end.
Okay. So there's one more work that I would like to discuss with you about creative labor as well. Flexier Than You. Like, I forgot about the name for a second. So this was also looking at this idea of creative labor, but of course the way that it was made is very, very different from the live creative show, which is a reality show. This was, as you said, some found footage, some things are recorded, and it's like the conversation between these two people, I would assume. So what were you exploring in this one?
Yeah, so Flexier Than You was actually like the introduction or like the prologue to Life Creative Show. So I showed the video work for this underground light arts event called A Weekend Affair, and it was like more of a video essay, because at that point of time I knew I was like interested or like obsessed with this notion of creative labor, but I still didn't know what format this exploration or interrogation was gonna be. So it was more of like me trying to put into words, but in a more, in a less boring way, like what are the theoretical things that I wanted to look into, but at the same time also like use found footage, because that just makes things more interesting and more relatable, like so that it's not just like one person reading out the theories that you've read and you wanted to explore in like practically like in the artwork. So like I kind of see through a lot of like local like pop culture or like local media to make this like essay more palatable to Singaporean audiences. So there was obviously like a clip from like Money Sense, Ministry of Finance, the Zodiac like race.
Yeah,
and there was that, and then there was like the Sam Willows, local like indie band track
video,
called Papa Money.
Yeah.
Which I had a lot of fun like piecing together, but also like getting copyright issues like on YouTube now.
Oh my god, yeah. Always goes down to that, right? I see. I like this idea of a video essay. So would you say that this is more of your way of making sense and also sharing with the world, like even if it's a theoretical question that you want to discuss, instead of writing an essay, it's more like, how do I make it also visual and like add that layer as well, and then also make it maybe more appealing as compared to just reading an essay?
Yeah, definitely that. And also I'm not a good like essay writer. Like I wish I had more flair or like vocabulary that will aid me in the essay writing segment of my art practice, but I just don't. Like, I've tried, but I can't. So I think, like, for me, the next best thing, or rather the thing that sparks joy, sparks more joy in me, is to do this sort of, like, cultural, like, visual matchmaking, I would say. Like, I'll have an idea or, like, a phrase in mind that I want to talk about, but explain it with a video or with a few images that combine to form the narrative that you had in your mind.
I love that. I think everyone just has different strengths, and you should always just try to play to your strength. And I wish this idea of like a video essay was more common. Like, I think it's quite hard to put it, say it's just art or it's just like academia or whatever. It's kind of like a bit of both, and yeah,
I mean, like for me, like art has always been like an intersection of various different disciplines. You know, there's no one way to, if you ask me like what is my art or like what is art right now, like my answer will just be that it's just a whole hodgepodge of anything that you can think of or you can find, and just putting it together in a, packaging it in a way that is understandable and like relatable to others. But at the same time, you know, it's not possible to make it relatable to everyone in the world. So, you know, as long as you know who's your audience, or rather like who's your main group of audience, and work towards creating that connection with them through your works, that for me will be the ideal way to practice.
So both self-expression, but also in a way that can connect with people, and it's not just about expressing whatever you want.
Yeah.
Do you think that's important? Do you think it's important that you form a, or like the audience can get something from your work, or that you can form this connection? Like, is it important to you?
I think it's so important, but it's a lot harder than it sounds to actually do that. So I don't think I found like the perfect way to connect directly and immediately with my audiences, but kind of again like borrowing the way like real love works. Like maybe like set up a stage for people to feel that, or maybe like I wouldn't be able to understand this like video essay that much in the beginning, but then like giving them like little snippets or like pieces like during the video essay that make them, oh, actually, like, I've seen this on TV before, or like I've heard this song before, and then like that register will make them try to want to understand the whole thing as a whole, like more. So like I cannot promise that, you know, you'll understand every single thing that happens in a video, but you know, but let's try to work together, let's try to use our brains together in one way or another to form this narrative for ourselves. And also like media, I think the line between like art and media is so blurred right now. Like they both are tools to disseminate information. So media becomes like a bit more like easy to understand because there's that binary of like reality and non-reality, you know, like the news is obviously like
supposedly real,
supposedly true, objective, and like Sherlock is obviously like fictional, and that like not crossing the boundaries of each other like makes media like a great tool for information dissemination. So like maybe that's why I'm trying to like move towards the category of media almost more than like art as well.
And what do you think is the difference there? Is it the non-commercialization aspect of art? Of course art can also be commercialized and artists need to make money. Like what difference is there for you?
I think art is definitely not non-commercial because it has become like the currency for the hyper-rich also, right? In some ways, like people in the institution. But I think the main difference for me is that I see media now as propaganda. Yeah. So for me, media is propaganda most of the time, unless it's extremely independent, you know, or has no ties to political organizations or even financial organizations. I think art still has a bit more of that autonomy. But of course you can say like institutionalized art also has that connection to institutions. But you know, like you can't really like just make a show without the support, a show like in the traditionally like media sense, without the support of all these like big
sponsors,
players. No, like a TV station will want to like just show your work or whatever. So actually when you're making art, you can do that in some way, but you have to find your own ways of distribution, which is difficult and tough at times. But you know, like the people who are watching also know that.
Lastly, I want to ask one more question. For you now, like what are things that you think are beautiful, and is beauty important to you in art making?
Beauty. I think beauty is so important to me, but also like your definition of beauty can change. Like at a certain point of time, like I don't know, maybe for like rebellious reasons or whatever, you can almost turn to like the anti-beautiful and try to rationalize that as beautiful in your mind, and that's the only thing you see as beautiful. Like for me, like, beautiful changes all the time, and like right now at this very point of time, what is the most beautiful to me, it's like miniatures,
like these toys or what?
Yeah, so like my newest like obsession or something like that is all the like dioramas, you know, like,
oh wow, yeah,
like where they try to make a flower shop but mm-hmm. miniature, so mm-hmm. they use all the like polymer clay to make all these things, and then the Daiso
yeah.
trinkets to form like tables and picture frames, and like, you know that it's not real lah, because it's so much less detailed, but at the same time also so detailed in its own sense that it really takes me to a different place lah. Like when I see everything on the screen now, because I can't see anything like in real life now, I can't go to a flower shop or whatever, so yeah. when I see a miniature flower shop on my screen, I'm like, oh my god, that's actually so beautiful, like more beautiful than a big flower shop.
Oh yeah, it kind of all ties back to that fictionalization, and it's just like our idea of a world, right? Like world creating worlds.
Cool. Yeah, like different ways of world building when you can't actually build something in real life.
Yeah. Maybe this yeah. this is why kids like to play with Barbie dolls or all that kind of things, where they can have a house.
Exactly, we've all sort of, maybe not regressed, but like progressed, like to how, you know, kids see the world and want to remake the world, I think.
Yeah, there's like a really nice sense of innocence there. I like that. Cool. So at the end, let's play this song that you have selected, Built This Way. That was by Samantha Ronson, and it's from the movie Mean Girls. Why this song though?
Well, it was something that that's always been at the back of my head, like the instrumental part of the song. Like, I don't know, I just sense of, there's this sense of like melancholia and bittersweetness to it that like me and Chong decided to use as one of the like bass tracks for our trailer for LCS. And then I would think that if I listen to it while editing, right, it would make me dislike the song, you know, or like you hear it so many times, it becomes saccharine.
Mm.
But that hasn't happened, which is quite rare for me.
Wow.
And so then I thought there must be something really, really special about this song and me.
Let's find out what's special about the song. Okay, so to end off the show, Built This Way by Samantha Ronson. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye. Did you ever feel like you wanna be someone else for just one day? Did you ever feel like you wanna see through another pair of eyes? Did you ever think I might wanna be with anyone else for just one day? Did you ever really think of me when I walked away? The book, the dunks, and the bottle of Jack, the smokes, the slouch, and my eyes. Now you think you know what you think you'll find. You think you'll figure me out tonight. But you'll never know what I won't share. Cause I don't care, no, I don't care. You think you'll figure me out tonight, but I don't care. And I wonder.